Hello and welcome to Guru Please, the show about pushing the limits of life and stepping up to live with more meaning, more purpose, and more passion. I'm your host, Jessica Sun. I'd like to introduce Vip Jaswal. Vip is a global business advisor, keynote speaker, and author of CPR, a simple three-step solution for laid-off midlifers who need to get their life back to work. He speaks on a variety of topics, including dealing with depression, defining diversity, modern-day leadership, team motivation, and inspiration. He's also the creator of the HEAL Foundation to help those who are depressed, distressed, and in need of guidance so that they can carry on living. Welcome to the show, Vip.
I am so glad to be here. Thank you so much, Jessica. It's a real honor to be on your show. I mean, I've been listening to some of the other podcasts and things like that, and then the variety of guests you bring, and then the way you conduct them, and then get them to reveal the best of themselves has been entertaining. I've been listening all week.
Oh, well, I really appreciate that, Pip. Thank you.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
Yeah. So I'm really curious about your book, CPR. Now, in it, you describe how you were laid off in 2016, so 4 years ago, and the whole journey that it took you through till now in terms of kind of coming to terms with it and then also using it to create a new life for yourself. And I think that's super applicable right now during COVID. What a coincidence that you released it, you know, right now. Bring us back to that time in 2016 when all these things were happening around you.
Well, you know, even to this day, I'm still puzzled if I was laid off or actually I left. so that's the funny sort of dilemma that I am in, that I expressed in the book. There was a one key sentence where I wrote that I'm still confused today, that when my contract came to an end and it wasn't renewed, was I laid off or did I actually leave? But at the end of the day, I'm not with them and they're not with me. So it was an unusual situation because for the first time in my life, I haven't worked. I've been working since I was 13. And you know, working in restaurants, coffee factories, and then doing telesales calls because those were big back in the day and things like that. And then I did a business, and then I moved into international banking, and then I went into international media. So it's been a very tough, very humbling, at times humiliating experience because, you know, I'm the provider for my house and household, and I'm the father figure, and all of a sudden, you know, when you can't provide and you have to lower your lifestyle a little bit to match, you know, nothing coming in, and then you've got to just make do with your savings and things like that. So it's a very, very humbling experience. But I think what I learned through that, I put it into my book, CPR, because I've been through some very wild emotional rides because of, you know, having not being actively employed.
Right.
People look forward to Friday and I'm thinking, you know, how blessed are you to actually have a purpose in life? Even if you don't like what you do, you're still doing something. You know, the three secrets to living a happy life is, number one, someone to love and be loved, something to do, and something to hope for. Mm-hmm. And if you have those three things, you trust me, you're very happy. Because the moment you don't have one of those, then you'll realize how happy you were when you had those three things. And something to do, you know, you get up in the morning, you have your morning routine, you have your breakfast, you have your commute, then you meet your, what I call a secondary family, you know, your colleagues. There's always something going on at work. There are deadlines and things like that. That's part of a routine. And coming back home and deciding what you're going to do in the evening and things like that. it's something to have, something to, you know, really to be filled with gratitude for. Because if you don't have that, then you, you know, like for the last four years, it's been like waking up in the morning. What am I waking up for? When you face an empty day ahead of you, the just the concept of getting out of bed is a battle. Like, why am I doing it? I can go back and sleep for another 2 hours. But now if I sleep another 2 hours, I feel guilty because I felt I've wasted the first half of the day. Now I'm in a bad mood for the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to self-discipline.
Right. Yeah. Wow. I can just imagine that, you know, once you're just stripped bare of career or, you know, these kinds of external things in your life, you start wondering, well, who am I really underneath right. all of that?
And that's you know, and that's when people are complaining about their jobs, I sit back and I'm going to have to sort of bite my tongue, because why are you being so ungrateful?
Yeah.
Because at least you have something to do. You have a purpose. Now, if you're not being able to make it work, then maybe that's something within yourself or within the dynamics of within which you operate mm-hmm. are not coming together. But at least you're blessed with a purpose that pays you, that keeps you occupied for the first half of the day every day, and then allows you the luxury of spending what you've earned for the second half of the day and the weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's always something to be grateful for. You know, even if you hate your job, hey, at least you have one.
Right.
Walk us through your like these steps for CPR. It's correction, protection, redirection.
Right.
Like what are these steps? Like what do they mean?
Well, I actually wrote CPR in 30 days. When COVID started, we were all locked in. I actually didn't feel any different because it's been COVID scenario for me for the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. For, you know, not going to work, I've been working from home. It's actually a very dangerous phase of your life. This whole unintended interruption of being laid off or leaving, because it's really the last lap of your life that you can add value. Because after that, you know, comes retirement. Number one. Number two, at midlife, you are actually at the pinnacle of your value. You still have your energy, you have experience, and you have expertise all coming together all at once. It's at that pinnacle. It's really, you're at that bursting point where you are the most valuable you will ever be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why it's just so tough at that point.
It's so tough because, you know, I'll see something in the news and say, if I was in that position, I would be able to do this and I could do that and bring this together, bring that together. You know, there's so much going on in my head.
Yeah.
So when, you know, so coming back to your question, CPR, it took me, I think, maybe 3 years or 4 years to think about how I managed myself during this time to keep my sanity, keep my wisdom, keep my integrity all intact, mm-hmm. Especially my emotional state intact, so that I would still be of value to my family, to my friends, and to, you know, hopefully future employers.
Yeah, I'd like to hear more about what exactly you did to keep that sanity and to like stay with it.
Well, it was, you know, the book, I wanted to write a book that was part story of my experiences and part reality in terms of, you know, how people in their midlife can manage the real situation. So CPR, I got that idea because when I left, my world stopped. So medically, CPR is when you try and resuscitate someone because of a, you know, a stroke or a heart attack. So I use the acronym CPR, but then I turned it around and I said, it stands for correction, protection, redirection. Now, when you stop work at this age and you are stuck, you actually go through a process of correction because everything in your life will change. You can't go to as many restaurants as you normally do. Your dry cleaning bills get reduced. You start paying attention to the overheads of your house. Maybe I won't have Hulu, Amazon Prime, Netflix, and Disney and all that. You know, maybe I'll just choose one. You start reducing, you know, like your gardener's bills, for example. You don't get your car washed twice a week. You start looking at every expense that's hitting your bottom line of your own personal circumstances. So you start correcting yourself there. Your relationships start to correct. People who you thought were friends, well, they were friends maybe because of what position you held and who you were in the industry or in the corporate world. That automatically happens. It's not just an isolated incident. People like to be around people whom they consider valuable.
Yeah, you have your new normal.
A new normal.
And then going into, yeah, protection.
Yeah, so now going into protection, what you are left with is actually what you need. If you actually think about it, all the relationships that went away, they were never friends. They were friendly, but they were never friends. The relationships that stayed were the ones that protected me. The fluff goes. In your new normal, you are surrounded now by the things that matter the most. When I used to go to restaurants, I was more focused on the food rather than the time that I had with my wife or my family. Now that that's gone away, I'm actually left with the fact that, well, I can try and emulate that recipe at home. Meal times are more conversational. And as a result, you know, my communication with my family, my wife, my son has increased because we have less luxuries to be distracted by.
Yeah, you find yourself in a place where it's really the bare essentials that are remaining.
And you know, what leaves you is not as important as what stays with you.
Right, exactly.
So that's where I found that I was actually surrounded by protection.
I see. It's also kind of a natural thing that occurs and you realize what's most important to you.
Yes. So we talk about natural evolution. Well, in this case, it was natural devolution. So instead of evolving upward, I was devolving downward. But either way, nature has a way of balancing things out to match you with what you need at the place where you are.
I can imagine that even though you've been able to kind of prioritize what's most important, I'm sure that it was a painful process nonetheless. What was that de-evolution process like?
You said it in one word, painful. Extremely painful because, like I said, I've never not worked in my life. And for me to actually go through and acknowledge my new normal, one good thing was, though, I never accepted my new normal. I adapted, but I never accepted because the danger is the moment you accept it, you will never rise.
So you held on to hope for the future.
Always held on to hope.
Yeah.
Always held on to hope, always holding on to hope. And not just wishful thinking, it's also about doing. So I have to think more creatively, and that's where the whole process of redirection comes into being. At your new normal, now that you've come to terms with what you have lost and what's left in terms of protecting you, how can you redirect your vision and your resources to help now hit a new target?
How do you define that new target?
I define that new target. There's a lot happening in the press, right? A lot of things happening to a lot of companies. Now, I've raised my sights and said, instead of applying to HR, I'm going to communicate with the CEO.
So it's kind of like pushed you to get more creative with what you do and think outside the box.
The funny thing is, at my lowest of lows, when I felt that I had lost everything, it's that point of maximum danger, that when you've reached that point of maximum danger, when you actually, that's when you realize that you're at that point of minimum fear. When I had lost everything, that's when I realized I had nothing to lose. Now, if I write off to the CEO and he says no thanks, that's fine. I never had it in the first place.
Yeah, it's a very powerful place to be in.
It's a very powerful place to be in. That sense of redirection gives you the freedom to think laterally. And that's what's very important.
Yeah, because you can be open to kind of new opportunities you would have never thought of before, and explore things that maybe Yes. you didn't get that chance to in the past. Tell us about your idea and your take on the supposed kind of straight and true path versus a more of a nonlinear path to success.
You know, I'm not sure how many people actually in life have that they can say a linear path, because these days everything is so unpredictable. I'm sure in your life as well, it's not been totally linear.
Yeah, the idea of a linear path is simply an idea.
Yeah. These days, guessing too much into the future is a fool's game, because 2 years from now, things will be different. 4 years from now, they'll be definitely different. 5 years from now, no one should even guess. The whole concept of having a linear path is something that, well, never happened to me. And I'm not sure. I know a lot of people who it's happened to. And actually, a linear path, if you're aiming for a linear path, you're actually exposing your vulnerability, because you're so used to that, okay, after this step will come the next step, and then it'll come the next step, and then I'll reach here, I'll reach there.
Yeah.
Only to realize that, you know, we're not gifted with steps in life anymore. Not that I think we ever were.
You mentioned that, you know, leaving your position in 2016 was very humbling. The death of the ego is pretty tough yes. thing to kind of go through. And it needs to happen, you know, on a daily basis, I think, so that we can live in our truths and not get carried away with all the distractions. What do you do to stay aware of that, of the ego?
On one end, you have ego. On the other end, you have shame. Now, if I continue to have an ego for the last 4 years, then really I should be in an asylum, because I have nothing to have an ego about. I'm not bringing any money home. I'm using my savings. They say save for a rainy day. Well, now I'm using what I had saved for a storm. My ego went right away. I mean, I'm a very real person, and people need to be real. Mm-hmm. Act based on what you contribute. That's very important. So I didn't have ego. I actually had a lot of shame. I was highly embarrassed of myself. Depressed, highly emotional. It was all internal. It really wasn't external. External, maybe I was quieter than usual and maybe not as responsive as I normally was, or as perky as I was. So I had gone from being, well, possibly egotistical to feeling totally shameful. Being shameful doesn't help either. Being shameful can make you an introvert and can take you to depths that, you know, it get very hard to get out of. So in my redirection, I transferred the energy of feeling shameful to guilt. You're still in that negative zone. But here's the thing. If you transfer that energy that you feel shameful about and transfer it to feeling guilty, guilty that you're not able to provide, guilty that your life has come to an unintended interruption, not a full stop, but an unintended interruption. Guilty that you are not able to do the things that you once were. If you transfer it to guilt, what guilt does is it allows you to react. Shame doesn't allow you to react. Shame closes all your doors around you. I don't want to see people. I don't want to talk to people. I feel I disrespect myself, blah, blah, blah. But guilt actually allows you to react. When you feel guilty about something, if you hurt somebody, right?
Mm-hmm.
Say if accidentally you drop some coffee on me. You feel guilty. So what's your first reaction? Is you're going to look for some napkins or something and you'll apologize and you know, try and make me feel better and with your apology and with the napkins and towel or whatever, right? So guilt always comes with a reaction.
Because in shame, you feel like, well, I am just, you know, a worse person or something.
Shame, you just want to go into your shell.
Yeah. Whereas guilt, you know you can do something about it.
Right. And shame is always about me, me, me. Why did I do that? How did I do that? Blah, blah, blah. But if you transfer that emotion into something else that causes a reaction, by guilt, you stop worrying about yourself. By guilt is, oh, how could I let my wife live like this? How could I let my son live like this? I'm not going to allow it. I'm going to give them a better life. I'm going to give them better things than what they had before. When times were good.
Yeah, like taking your focus off yourself and really thinking about someone else. Yeah.
You know, I have a saying that a capitalist and a philanthropist have one thing in common, that they both believe that the way of enriching themselves is by enriching others first. You see, it doesn't matter what that enrichment is. It doesn't matter what the currency of enrichment is.
Well, what's your take on failure? And how do you deal with failure?
Oh, failure. That's a very interesting one because it's very important that we define failure, okay? Let me actually define failure from my perspective. For me, failure is when you don't get what you want and you stop trying. In that case, I've never failed because I've always tried again. So I've never failed, but I've always lost. I never get what I want first time round. It is almost a writing on the wall, but it doesn't stop me from trying and trying again.
Yeah. When you look at failure like that, it really puts you in control of, okay, am I going to try again?
Right.
Or am I going to give up? And so it puts failure in your own hands. It's not determined by somebody else.
Exactly. And let me tell you something. If you develop that mindset that losing is simply the art of getting the formula right. Like I'm sure, you know, when you were doing the podcast, when your first one came out and then the second one came out, you were fixing, amending things. Something wasn't working right. And then you learned along the way. And now it's become almost like clockwork.
Yeah.
So you've got the formula right. So initially you were losing. You were not getting a certain thing right or whatever, whether it was a technical issue or whether it was a topic issue or whatever, or how you were conducting the conversation or the flow of the conversation. And now it's become second nature. So from losing, you've gone to winning. Because losing actually helped you get the formula right.
Yeah, it's like losing is on the path to winning.
Right. And yes, there will be some people who you will either see or claim that, you know, they don't lose because they managed to get it right because they prepared well or whatever they say that is. Good for them. You know, stop worrying about what other people say.
Absolutely.
Some of the things that, you know, I have told some of the young people that I mentor that stop being impatient. Not everything you do in life is a social media post where immediately you start getting likes, you know. Success requires a strategy. And it's very rare to achieve success first time round. You've got to be emotional about the effort that you put into your work, but you cannot be emotional about the outcome. Because let me tell you, if you lose, you're one step closer to depression if you don't know how to handle it well, right?
Right.
If you win, you're one step closer to arrogance because you think you're owed it.
How can we flip that?
The way you do that is, like I said, you've got to be emotional about the effort that you put into it, but never emotional about the outcome. If you win, great. That's fine. Okay. Smile a bit, enjoy it, now move on, because there's always something to move on to.
Yeah.
If you lose or you have not got what you wanted, despite that, it's not the end of the world. There is something in the work that you did that is not part of the right formula. Go back, figure it out.
Yeah, I think that really points to kind of doing things with purpose that's very meaningful for you. And so regardless of the outcome, you know, you've done your best work.
And, you know, like when I failed, like what do I learn from failure? Because there's always something to learn from both success and failure, but there's more to learn from failure. Mm-hmm. I mean, I failed in business. But one thing that I did learn from my failure was that even though I went bankrupt, but I went bankrupt with integrity. I had paid all my creditors, paid all my debts. But I realized that I had failed because maybe I didn't do enough research and I didn't understand what it takes to maintain and grow a business. I realized that, you know, I wasn't ready for the responsibility of running a business. I wasn't ready for the responsibility of looking after a customer. Sometimes you've got to know yourself. And maybe I'm a late developer, maybe. You know, I failed at business, but I didn't lose at life. Mm-hmm. It's not what you want. It's what are you willing to give and what are you willing to give up to get what you want. And that's sometimes the best way of learning about who you are and what you want to do. Especially the when you're in your 20s. I knew what I wanted to do and I knew what I didn't want to do right from a very young age. I worked on things that I could change. So I know one of the things I can change are my attitude, my personality, and the level of education for something. Now, if I use those three things and I start working on them, as I work on them, the level of passion, the emotion of effort that I put into something actually tells me, does that thing really stimulate me or not?
Yeah, I definitely agree that these things really help us get closer to ourselves, because right. We don't immediately know ourselves that deeply. It's through these different experiences that we find out who we are and what we actually like to do and what we want to do.
And something as simple as like, oh, if I submit a job application and it comes back rejected, before I used to feel angry. I used to feel like, oh, you know, the company lost a great opportunity in hiring me and all that negative stuff. Until one day it suddenly clicked and said, well, you forgot the most important point of all of this. They rejected me, but they accepted someone else. So there is someone out there who is being better than me, who is working harder than me, who is working smarter than me, who's presented themselves in a much better way than me.
Does that motivate you?
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. And it's very humbling. It actually puts things into perspective rather than leave it in a vindictive pocket. I take that negativity and put it in another pocket that allows me to be constructive with it. So once I realize that, you know, it's not that they didn't like me or that they didn't appreciate me. I'm sure they did. But they appreciated someone else more. Now, how can I be that person more so that the next time a similar job opportunity comes, I can close that gap that I had left open?
Yeah, it gets you thinking. And
yes,
it shows you that whatever it is, it's not that you're a worse person. It's more that there are some skills that you might want to cultivate and,
right,
you know, a certain way to present yourself.
So don't think of in terms of, how could they not recruit me? I'm made for the job and things like that. Mm-hmm. Look, it's almost like life is a battle. In this battle, you're fighting people that you don't know. You don't know who your competitors are for that one role. So when you are positioning yourself for that role, you got to think and look inwardly and say, okay, what does that role have or need that I don't? It's a very hard task to do. Imagine stepping outside of yourself and then looking back in. Self-criticism is the worst project ever. Because even if you ask your own family, or your friends, they're very reluctant to give you the truth. They don't want to hurt your feelings, right?
You have to do that for yourself.
You have to do that for yourself. And it's so, so hard.
We've really talked a lot about the ego, about shame, about kind of what to do in those times in our lives where we're kind of knocked down, and how to turn that around and see the positive in it. Thank you so much, Viv, for sharing all these things with us. I think it takes a lot of strength to talk about these things.
Well, it's been a pleasure. You know, I got to commend you on the way you conduct it. It's like being in confession, except it's not a church. You just allow me to pour myself and my thoughts and what I have to say. And then, you know, that takes a great skill. You're going to go a long way.
Thanks.